pertain you?
One of the most overused and still useful analogies about spiritual practice that I've heard over and over over the years is the analogy that training the mind is like training a puppy. I first heard it used by both Ajahn Thanissar Bhikkhu and also by Jack Kornfield, but it's been used by, the analogy has been used by many, many teachers, and the idea being that when you're training a puppy, you don't give it a 200-foot long leash and not pay attention to it and allow it to go wherever it wants, because more likely than not, the puppy will eventually wander out and get entangled in stuff in the world, and it will start digging up dead things, and it will get into conflict with larger dogs that could tear it to pieces, and will get itself into trouble. And the mind is the same way. When we don't practice keeping boundaries in the mind, keeping a sense of where of what's appropriate for the mind to usefully think of and what's inappropriate, the mind can get itself in a lot of trouble. It's a little bit, we tend to think that what we all think is that a peaceful mind is a free mind that can go wherever it wants, and quite frankly, a mind that wanders wherever it wants is not free or peaceful. It's a little bit like if you knew somebody who bought a yacht, an ocean faring yacht, I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, a yacht, a boat, whatever. I know nothing of boats. Like, a big boat. They bought a boat that was impressively large and could sail oceans, and you ask them, well, where are you going to take this boat? And they said, oh, I'm going to go float around the coast of Somalia. You might say, well, that's not very smart. Isn't that where all the pirates are? That's where people get kidnapped and killed. And they say, no, I want to be free. I want my boat to go wherever I want. That's what freedom and peace means. That's not what freedom and peace means. That means stupidity. You don't want your boat to float where it can get into trouble. You don't want your puppy to go where it can get killed. You don't want your mind free to wander to the kinds of thoughts that cause stress and suffering, that don't bring about lasting peace, that ensnare the mind. The Buddha said that there were seven areas that the mind tends to flow outwards into that cause it trouble. These are the obsessive tendencies known as anusaya, A-N-U-S-A-Y-A. And the Buddha, as usual, a man of lists, made a list of seven. They're sort of vaguely overlapping. They're things like fixating on people or things that bring us pleasure, fixating on people and things that get in our way and we find frustrating, fixating on our views and opinions about the way the world should be and about the way people should behave. Know that one. Worries about the future, doubts in our self-doubt, views about ourselves. Who am I, really? What do other people think about me? How am I perceived? How do I compare? And finally, worrying about the things we don't know about, trying to figure out everything. Mind is not comfortable with the idea that there's things that we might not know the answer to. It doesn't like not knowing. So the mind flows out into these obsessive channels. And like a puppy wandering around, it gets caught. Its leash, and it gets caught and lost and stuck. We get caught in these thoughts, and these thoughts turn into lokas, which are worlds, thought worlds, clouds that we live in, and then we do what's known as dissociate. We lose awareness of our body, what's going on around us. We find ourselves in conversations where we're not even hearing what the other person is saying. We're not truly focused on what's going on around us. We can wind up moving from our home to our job and not even understand how we got there because we were so lost in thought, etc. So this is the tendencies of Anusayas. And Anusayas are another word for what the Buddha called papancha, which is proliferating thought, thought that will not stop, thought that repeats itself in the mind. And this is one of the chief ways we cause ourselves stress and suffering. We allow the mind to go into a subject attached to an idea or a subject that the mind cannot detach from easily. There are these subjects, you know, what do other people think about me? What's going to happen to me? What is this person? What's going to happen with me and that person? How can I get rid of this roommate? Why do I have to work at this job? What is my future going to look like? All these areas are based largely on a couple of things that papancha is always based on. One, they're based on self. They're based on I. They're looking at the world in terms of how do I relate to everything? What's my role in everything? Why is everything happening to me? When we're in papancha, we tend to think that everything we're experiencing is pretty fucking unique. That's one of the things about papancha, the Buddha says, is that when we're in papancha, we lose track that virtually everything we experience is universal. I'll give you an example. You're at work, somebody doesn't appreciate your work, you're thinking, oh fuck, why am I in this stupid job? Why am I never appreciated? Why does this happen to me? And we completely lose track of, well, there are billions of people experiencing the exact same fucking thing right now, which is they're at their job, they're feeling underappreciated, they're unhappy, and they wish they had a job where everybody loved them all the time. That's what the mind does. The mind experiences discomfort, and rather than assume or believe or understand that discomfort is a universal experience, it's, as the first noble truth, the Buddha says, everybody gets old, sick, dies, doesn't get what they want, gets what they don't want, and is frustrated. Everybody, right? So all this stuff that happens to us, not in the details, but in the general scheme of things, everything we experience, all the feelings we experience, the emotional frustrations, what we experience, other people experience. We're not going through anything alone. But when we're in papancha, when we're in repetitive thought, when we're in obsessive thinking, we really believe that we're in this alone, that nobody understands what it's like, that I'm up against this world alone, that I'm going through this conflict by myself, that nobody's taking care of me, that it's really me, you know, and, you know, looking after myself and nobody else understands, etc. And, of course, that kind of thinking, because it's so dramatic, it really encourages a lot of thought. It really sucks the mind's energy into it. The dopamine starts flowing, and the adrenaline starts flowing, and the acetylcholine, and we have a mind that is really firing. And what's also happening is cortisol is being released, and we are experiencing unconscious but very real physical stress, which causes innumerable problems to your health, as well as to your long-term mental health. So one thing it does is when we're worried or when we're obsessed and fixating about something, we do stuff to our blood flow. We cause hypertension, lack of white blood cell growth, over the development of red blood cells, diminishment of melatonin and serotonin. So we create a non-optimal environment when we're obsessing, when we're caught in repetitive thought. It's not a good thing. So another thing about papancha is that it's always based on, or inevitably based on, speculation. We're always trying to figure out what's going to happen in the future, or how we can get around something, or what we should have done in the past. There's this very speculative nature to it, and that keeps us thinking a lot too, because we'll never know the answer to most of the things that the mind obsesses about. So, and another thing finally about papancha is that it promises us often we ask, well, this causes so much stress and so much suffering, obsessive thinking. Why do we do it? And one of the things that obsession promises us is that it will give us control. We really believe if we worry about the future, we worry about how other people think about us or how we compare, what's going to happen to me, or obsess about what something that somebody says to us, we really think that we can come up with the perfect way of living where we won't ever have to experience discomfort. That's the underlying promise. That's the advertisement of thought in our brain. If you think a lot, you'll figure out life. And guess what? You won't. It's a false advertisement. In the words of Chuck D, don't believe the hype. So, the Buddha contrasted papancha with vitakka, V-I-T-A-K-K-A, which is skillful thought. And by its nature, vitakka has a couple of things. A, it doesn't get sucked into the external world. It keeps some awareness of what's going on in the body. It's got a much larger, wider awareness. It doesn't fall in or get trapped by these thought worlds. It doesn't wander too far away from the body, like that little puppy that wanders too far away and gets into trouble. When the mind gets into trouble, it sort of wanders away from the here and now in the body, and it gets lost in these external worlds. When the mind is in a good place, it stays very close to home. When vitakka is not worried about speculation, it doesn't worry about what's going to, how the future is going to play out, it doesn't obsess about the past, it is focused on right here, right now. What can I do that's effective? What can I do that will bring me or the people around me as much peace as I can see that's skillful? So it's a form of limited thinking. It's not a kind of thinking where we have any problem turning it off. Vitakka is part of right thought, and right thought, the Buddha says, the first thing you know when you're in right thought is you can say, oh, I don't want to think about this anymore, and your mind will participate and will shut off. When you're in papancha, you'll say, oh, I don't know if I want to think about this, and your mind will go, oh, no, you're not getting out that easily. You're in trouble now. You're fucked. You're thinking about, you know, what your boss thinks about you and what's going to happen at your job. You're screwed because all of this is based on speculation. You'll not be able to put me down. But when you're thinking skillfully, when you're in vitakka, you're not thinking about trying to figure out the unsolvable. You're not allowing your mind to wander to things that it can't be effective on. You're accepting some basic limitations. You're focusing on what's happening right here now. How can I relax, bring peace into my life? How am I causing stress and suffering for myself? You're not in conflict with the world, because part of vitakka is that we're seeing how we cause ourselves stress and suffering. When we blame all our stress and suffering on the world, that's another form of thought that can never be solved, because we can't control the world or other people. But when we focus our thoughts on what am I doing that is causing myself stress right here, right now, that is very solvable. That is something that we can figure out. That is something that the mind can look at, come up with an answer, or not, and let go of. You're not going to obsess about that. So, another part of vitakka, or skillful thinking, finally, is what's known as intelligent equanimity, or upekkha. Upekkha is what the Buddha referred to as understanding that everything I'm experiencing right now is the result of my actions. What I've thought of, what I've done in the past, what I'm thinking and how I'm focusing my mind right now. My stress and suffering and happiness and peace is, by and large, the bulk of it is caused by how I use my mind. There's times that in life when somebody can cause us stress and suffering, but the bulk, the Buddha said, of the arrows that we're shot with are shot, we shoot ourselves with. The world doesn't shoot us with that many arrows. We shoot ourselves with many more arrows. For example, if somebody says, hey, you fuck, you know, I was watching Louis C.K. last night. Who's one of my favorite comedians. If you don't know Louis C.K., he's fucking hysterical. But he was saying that he cut off somebody in the street, and the guy said to him, "Hey, suck a bag of dicks." And he was like, "What does that even mean? Do you suck each dick, or do you suck the bag?" You know, he said the guy drove away, and he didn't even get a chance to ask him what sucking a bag of dicks means. And he was disappointed. But every time somebody tells us to suck a bag of dicks, we repeat that in our minds 50 times. He said to suck a bag of dicks. That's really fucked up. Why would anybody say that to me? Fuck that guy. I cut him off, but that's really... So we are shooting ourselves with those arrows, not the other person. He just told us that ridiculous thing once and then split. We continue to continue with that directive. So the key is to limit the mind so that we don't cause all this unnecessary, repetitive, obsessive thinking. Part of equanimity is acknowledging that I'm only capable of so much right now. I only have so much insight. I'm only capable of being so creative, giving somebody so much attention. The people I'm working with in my life, they have their own karmic background. They are only capable of so much. So we're both talking to each other through this huge web of past actions, past thoughts that have completely shaped our minds. It's no wonder that a lot of the times I say things to people and ask people to do things or state my truth or whatever, it doesn't get heard. It's no point getting worked up about it because simply a lot of times the way I explain it or the way what they've been through, the karma or the past actions don't align. They might have experienced some bald guy with tattoos as doing something fucked up to them in the past and they won't be receptive to me, or I might not like... There's something unconsciously about the way they look. I might experience poorly. There's limitations on everything. I only have so much energy to give to people. They only have so much energy to give to me. There's only so much time that we can give in a day to anything. So these limitations mean that rather than trying to fix everything in our lives, and rather than getting bent out of shape when stuff we've tried to fix doesn't get fixed, instead we realize that there are real limitations, and though we don't get anywhere by repeating in our mind, "Oh, this should be different. I should have done this. I should have been better. I should have been wiser. I should have been whatever. I should have done this or that." Or conversely, "They should have done this. They should have done the other thing." All that kind of thinking brings no clarity. It brings no peace. It doesn't bring any wisdom. The only thing the Buddha said is note when we've done something that hasn't worked out, acknowledge it, and move on. That's it. That's the sum amount of thought we need when we make a mistake. A big part of equanimity, though, is again, seeing lost causes and moving on. A great analogy, I think, for it is the idea of a heart surgeon, which is if you and 100 other people were seeing a famous heart surgeon and you all had cardiovascular issues, you wouldn't want the heart surgeon to get so caught up with one patient, trying to just fix that one patient, that all the 99 other people just basically were thrown by the wayside. You'd want that doctor to know where he could be effective, where he could best use his tools, to be compassionate, but to not simply become obsessive and just trying to fix one person who he can't fix. It's the same thing with our lives. There are relationships, there are responsibilities, there are jobs, there are friendships, there are family members, there are art projects that we cannot make work, no matter how hard we try. And intelligent equanimity means to see when it's not working out and move on to an area where we can be effective. There is no greater waste of the mind's resources than to continue pouring it into an obsessive endeavor where we are not getting results, where we're just wasting our time. Sometimes in life we really wish we had a different job, nothing's opening up, and so we let all the other areas in our life fall apart, or we really want a relationship and we're not getting the relationship we want, and we don't focus on our jobs. You see what I'm saying? We focus on the one person who's not going to like us at the expense of all our friends, trying to make that one person like us. We focus on trying to get love from family members who are not going to give us acceptance. We focus on trying to make things that aren't working right now work. And that's a terrible, terrible use of the mind. And that's where so much of our unskillfulness winds up pouring into. So, to summarize tonight's talk, a happy, peaceful mind is a mind that knows its limitations, a mind that knows where the waters are safe to drift, where, how much leash to give itself, but also knows which type of thoughts cause repetition, cause stress, cause speculation about things we cannot ever know the answer to, cause us getting completely lost so that we're not aware of how we feel or what's going on around us. We have to know where it's safe to keep our minds if we want to find true peace. So,